Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good Monday morning, everybody. So if you thought the firing of James Comey was like a million other news stories, you know, the media obsess over it for a few days and then move on to the next shiny object, not quite, or at least not quite yet. Trump and Jeff Sessions are now reviewing applications for the job of who will be investigating their Russia ties, an investigation from which Sessions supposedly recused himself. In a Wall Street Journal NBC News poll, 78% of those polled want an independent prosecutor or independent commission, not Congress, to lead the investigation. A Washington Post article calls the Comey firing backlash the most serious self-inflicted crisis yet for Trump and quotes a source close to the White House musing whether Trump is, quote, in the grip of some kind of delusion. His bizarre tweet on Friday saying James Comey better hope there are no tapes of their conversations is now boomeranging on the president. Here's Lindsey Graham on Meet the Press.
If there are any tapes, they have to be turned over. You can't be cute about tapes.
In an article on Slate, hilariously says Trump may have just falsely accused himself of wiretapping himself. And not hilarious, deadly serious, the former director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, assessed the situation this way yesterday on CNN's State of the Union.
I think in many ways our institutions are under assault, both externally, and that's the big news here, is the Russian interference in our election system. And I think as well our institutions are under assault internally.
Internally from the president?
Exactly.
Wow. James Clapper with Jake Tapper. With us now is Washington Post correspondent Philip Bump. He writes for their politics section, The Fix. One of his articles this weekend was called Why It's Likely That Trump Does Have Recordings of His Oval Office Conversations. Thanks for starting off your week with us, Philip. Welcome back to WNYC.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And I said starting off your week with us, but that distinction is kind of gone. There is so much news on Saturday and Sunday these days.
Sure.
The week kind of doesn't end and begin anymore. Does it feel like that to you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I also have a newborn, so my life is just constant paying attention to things that I never anticipated. So, yes, agreed.
And listeners, if you want a good distraction from all this for a minute, go to Philip Bump's Twitter feed and see a beautiful picture of his newborn right at the top, at least as of about an hour ago. So you called Trump's tweet about James Comey tapes a not-so-veiled threat. What's the threat?
Well, I think the implication, and I think the intended implication of that, was that Donald Trump wanted people to think that there was another side to the story that he could prove, right? I mean, he's very into this idea of having tape-recorded conversations. There are all these stories from his time at the Trump Organization within Trump Tower of how there were employees that were concerned that he was wiretapping them, that there were times when his office, the people were aware that there were recordings of his office because there was a mention made of someone wanting a drink, and suddenly the drink would appear. There's all this evidence both that Donald Trump has recorded and has recording devices in the offices that he uses, and that he is willing to issue that as a threat. And so I think that in this case, what he's saying essentially is he's trying to give the implication, I have information which runs counter to what Comey is saying. Whether or not that's the case, it's clear that there's a threat there because that's obviously what he's trying to do. He's trying to present this counterfactual.
But rather than it raising suspicions about Comey, it seems to have boomeranged to raise more suspicions about Trump. Let me play that Lindsey Graham clip again.
If there are any tapes, they have to be turned over. You can't be cute about tapes.
Lindsey Graham on Meet the Press, that's just 4 seconds. But why did Lindsey Graham say that on Meet the Press yesterday?
Graham has emerged. There aren't a lot of people within the Republican Party on Capitol Hill who are strong critics of Donald Trump. Lindsey Graham is a fairly strong critic of Donald Trump. And I think Lindsey Graham also wants to defend the sanctity of the process and the sanctity of the institution. And I think he understands that having a president who is taping conversations in the Oval Office is fraught for a number of reasons. But it also gives Congress a lot of leverage because Graham, as he says, they can subpoena if these tapes exist. They can figure out that they exist and they can actually listen to them, which is you know, obviously hugely politically problematic for Trump as well.
But his, and Graham's implication is that Trump has more to hide here than James Comey does.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty apparent, right? I mean, if there is a broad slew of tapes that exist within the White House, anything that Donald Trump has done up until last Friday, you could subpoena the tape and see what it was that he was talking about on any issue. So he's basically opened this huge can of worms by suggesting that he has recordings of one particular conversation, because that implies that he has conversations or recordings of all of his conversations, and that is obviously something that could lead to a lot of problems for him down the road.
And your article the other day was why it's likely that Trump does have recordings of his Oval Office conversations. One reason you give is the history of Trump doing that at Trump Tower. Another is the history of White House tapes. Do they still do that after a tampered-with tape got Nixon accused of obstruction of justice and really helped lead to his resignation from the presidency?
So it is unclear. There are suggestions both ways. There is a reporter that spoke with a source with the Secret Service that said that they still did have that recording capability. I think it's important to note that the extent to which recording happened prior to Nixon was far more extensive than probably people realize, starting with FDR, going through Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Johnson. So these were all presidents that did it as well. I actually uncovered a quote from an author who'd done an interview with Barack Obama in the Oval Office, and came out of it and his tape recorder had died. And the reporter said, "Oh, no, I didn't get a recording of that." And Ben Rhodes, a White House staffer, said, "Oh, well, we'll record everything in here." The White House, an Obama official, later reached out and said that was because they had transcription service sitting in the room. They had a stenographer. But it still emphasizes the point that everything that is done in the Oval Office, they're going to want to be able to figure out what was said, what was done. Obviously, when you're talking to media, there's a whole different standard there. But there are a lot of reasons, combined with the fact that Trump has embraced this in the past, to think that Donald Trump has embraced it in the White House as well.
So what happens now with that? Does Lindsey Graham or anyone else subpoena tapes to see if Trump asked for an unconstitutional loyalty oath by Comey to him rather than to the Constitution? Or is this just everybody talking on television and it's about nothing real?
No, I think that especially if Graham is willing to accede to this request, it certainly suggests that there will be an actual subpoena process for Tate somewhere down the road. Obviously, there are investigations that are underway in both the House and the Senate side that those subpoenas could be issued through. I think we're sort of starting to see how this will game out. I'm not entirely sure what the next steps are going to be on Capitol Hill, simply because this did just break on Friday. But Graham's statement alone suggests that there is going to be enough will to potentially unearth these things if they exist.
Listeners, we have Philip Bump here from The Washington Post. He's in the thick of it down there and knows what's going on. Any questions for him? Comments, welcome to 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. We do watch the Twitter feed go by. How about that devastating James Clapper statement on CNN? I'm going to play it again from the former director of National Intelligence and get your thoughts on it.
I think in many ways our institutions are under assault, both externally, and that's the big news here, is the Russian interference in our election system. And I think as well our institutions are under assault internally.
Internally from the president?
Exactly.
Holy moly, Philip. I mean, the president is undermining our democracy from the meticulously apolitical former director of National Intelligence. Will that have repercussions among Republicans other than Lindsey Graham in a way that matters, or does it just blow away in the wind of partisan politics?
I mean, that is the absolute essential question. I mean, I think it's important to note that while Clapper is apolitical, he's certainly not a shrinking violet and is always happy to offer his opinion on things. I think it's also important to note that public confidence in institutions across the board has dropped pretty precipitously over the course of the past several decades, so it suggests that these institutions are certainly ripe for someone to come in and undermine them from inside. But the point you raise about partisanship is absolutely critical. And one of the things that I looked at last week was the extent to which Donald Trump's approval rating links to how the Republicans treat him, right? And so polling has consistently shown that while Donald Trump is the most unpopular president at this stage of his presidency since polling began, he is, however, supported very strongly by Republicans. And polling also suggests that when you ask Republicans, if you are voting for someone for the House who is a supporter of Donald Trump, does that make you more or less likely to vote for that House candidate? Republicans say either it makes them more likely to vote for him or it doesn't affect them either way. And as long as that holds true, as long as there's political cover for Republicans to vote or to stand with Donald Trump or vote with Donald Trump, then they're going to continue to do so. And there's no indication yet in polling that that's going to change.
So does that poll number tell us that the perception of reality in America is so divided along partisan lines that Democrats' heads are exploding, and even Lindsey Graham's and James Clapper's heads are exploding about the threat to democracy in America, while almost all Republicans are like, you people are just so biased against Trump?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important that to realize that this happens in an environment in which Republicans both naturally have an antipathy toward the mainstream media, but also have had that antipathy fostered over the course of also decades, right? And so there exists now, because of the fractured media landscape, there exists a media outlet that can cater to basically every political whim. We have seen how that has created these sort of alternate realities of belief, and that gives Republicans, I mean, for example, if you look at how Fox News in particular covered the Comey firing, I mean, Andrew Kaczynski from CNN surfaced these stories on Fox News that were essentially calling this the Comey conspiracy, that the mainstream media was involved in, as though there was some big conspiracy that the mainstream media was proposing that ran counter to what actually happened with James Comey, which, of course, is nonsense. I mean, he was fired by Donald Trump. It is pretty black and white in that regard.
But he was fired by Donald Trump, and then Trump went on NBC with Lester Holt and said, I fired him because of Russia.
Exactly. And somehow that is framed as a mainstream media conspiracy, and therefore we should stand with Donald Trump. And when you look at polling, Fox News is the most watched news channel in America pretty consistently. That's starting to waver a little bit. But the reason why is because it is by far the most watched among members of the Republican Party. And as such, that is the worldview that they're seeing on TV. Whether or not they agree with it, that's what they're seeing. And I think that can't help but have some sort of an effect.
With Philip Bump from the Washington Post politics section, The Fix. Irene in Queens, you're on WNYC. Irene, thanks a lot for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to comment and just remind us about how Trump claimed that the Miss Universe woman had sex tapes. Remember after Hillary's campaign, debate with Hillary?
Yeah, now that you remind us.
He falsely claimed that, you know, the Miss Universe woman had sex tapes out there that he possibly had access to. I think he's just still operating as an entertainer, basically, in his kind of PR strategy from his entertainment days, and hasn't dawned on him that in politics it has a lot more of a repercussion.
Irene, thank you very much. Or, to Democratic sensibilities, he's an evil genius. And he does all of this stuff on purpose, and he's manipulating everybody. And even while his poll numbers sink among Democrats and independents, he maintains this fierce loyalty among Republicans who circle the wagons because they see him as embattled, you know, by the media and by the establishment, quote unquote. And he's just, you know, the smartest man in the room, not the most delusional. Does anybody really know?
Well, I mean, I think there's not a whole lot of evidence to suggest that Donald Trump is developing grand strategies around media outreach that he then deploys. I mean, I think that, you know, going back to the old philosophy 101 theory of Occam's razor, the most natural assumption here is instead that Donald Trump acts mostly out of what he's feeling in the pit of his stomach, and oftentimes what he does is a reaction that is primarily based on self-defense. I think that helps explain 99.9% of the things that he does that are unusual in the public eye.
We have a tweet from a listener. regarding the Clapper clip, saying, are you seriously going to play that Clapper clip twice without mentioning how he lied to Congress about domestic surveillance? Huh. And after the Edward Snowden revelations, or was it before the Edward Snowden revelations and the Snowden revelations just exposed the lie, he lied to Congress. He basically lied under oath about whether there was domestic surveillance on a mass basis of our metadata, right?
Yeah, that's right. He was asked point blank by Senator Ron Wyden during a hearing whether or not the NSA was collecting information on Americans, and he said no, they were not. He later then tried to say that this was, he had somehow misspoken or misunderstood the question. I mean, he came up with some sort of excuse. It was pretty clear, though, that he had misrepresented it. That said, I don't know that undercuts the fact that he was someone who was obviously a very high-level official within a White House administration and now views what is happening through, I think, a totally justifiable lens, which is that Donald Trump has attacked the media. He has attacked a lot of the other institutions that comprise American society, particularly when they run oppositionally to him.
And to remind people why James Clapper was even on television yesterday getting asked that question by Jake Tapper, Clapper had testified to Congress that he has seen no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, but he clarified that to say he has seen nothing to prove it or disprove it. That's what the investigation is looking for. But Trump twisted the meaning of what Clapper said to argue that Clapper exonerated him by saying there's no evidence of collusion. Is that the right context for that exchange on CNN?
Yes. So Clapper was on Capitol Hill again last week testifying with Sally Yates, the former acting attorney general. And yes, Donald Trump, Clapper at one point in time was on, I believe, an NBC program and was asked about any evidence of collusion, said that in the report that the intelligence agencies provided to the White House, they did not include any evidence of collusion. That was the way that he framed that at the time. But it's important to note, I talked to some FBI agents last week about the Comey firing, and one of them had worked on the Watergate issue. And one of the things he pointed out was, at the beginning of the Watergate investigation, they didn't have any evidence that Richard Nixon was complicit either, and that's why they had the investigation. But it came out over the course of the investigation, Comey and others have pointed out that this Russia investigation was still only at the very front end of that as well.
Will in Norwalk, you're on WNYC. Hi, Will.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
Great. So I've noticed in the discussion of these Oval Office recordings that were talking about them as
possible recordings, if they exist.
Right. We're talking about them as though they're actually physical audio cassettes. Do we think that that's actually the case, or are they more likely digital recordings? If so, does that make them more easy to tamper with and get rid of, or more difficult to conceal?
Good question, and certainly I don't think anybody's using cassette tapes anymore, and presumably it would be digital recordings. And Trump put the word tapes in quotes in that tweet, didn't he? Comey better hope there are no tapes, quote unquote. And I don't know if Trump just meant to distinguish old-fashioned physical tapes from digital recordings, or how did you take that in quotes? And to the caller's good question, would digital audio be easier or harder to tamper with than physical tapes?
Great. So both very good questions. And to the first point, I think the way that I interpreted Trump putting those in tapes is, you may recall that when he was soundly criticized for having accused Barack Obama of having wiretapped Trump Tower, that he defaulted to this position of, well, I put wiretapped in quotes in some of those tweets, therefore I didn't mean literally he wiretapped it. And so I think that he has learned the lesson that by putting something in quotes, he can also try and later claim that he was being vague and he didn't actually mean that it was a taping in the sense that you might assume. So that said, turning to the question of whether or not, if these recordings exist, it is almost certainly the case that they are digital. You know, they used tapes, obviously, back in the Watergate days because that was the technology available. If they are digital and they are deleted, then there is, of course, this cascade of people who have violated federal law, because there are all sorts of rules in place around records requests or around maintenance of records within the White House. If you were to have possession of something that had been subpoenaed by Congress and you delete those or get rid of them in any way, you violated federal law. And then the question is, are there enough people within the Trump White House willing to fall on their swords and lie if brought before Congress, for example, and asked under oath if these recordings existed and what happened to them, are there enough people to actually fall on their swords and lie to Congress in that regard to protect their existence from being revealed? And I simply don't think that's the case.
By the way, for some reason, the word tape does seem to have cultural persistence. Even here, where we haven't used physical tape in like 15 years, people still say, oh, are you going to play that tape of Comey? You're going to play that tape of Clapper? So for some reason, there's a whole generation of people working at WNYC who have never seen a tape. But people say, are you going to play that tape? So it has...
And they'd be rolling down their car windows, too.
Cultural persistence. James in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, James.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Actually, I'm calling because I believe somewhere that James knew that he was going to meet with Trump. Therefore, being the director of FBI, he might have had something to protect himself by even secretly taping or recording from his cell phone, what have you. And that is probably something he's keeping for last thing that he can probably bring up. In this case, Trump does something. But what I was actually telling to your screener, that there got to be a quid pro quo somewhere, probably between Trump and Jim Comey, about something that happened within their talking. Because he's not coming forward. He doesn't want to say anything right now. So I would suspect that Trump is making a deal with him.
Philip, why won't Comey come forward this week? He was invited to testify before, I think, the Senate Intelligence Committee for tomorrow after he got fired, and he said no. What's up with that?
Well, he said in the past that he wants to testify in a public forum, and I think that, James Comey is a career law enforcement official. I think it is almost certainly the case that whatever conversation he had with Donald Trump, whether or not he recorded it while they were having the conversation, which seems sort of unlikely to me, although it's legal because D.C. Allows you, if you are, one party in the conversation can record it if they're a participant in it. But it is almost certainly the fact that after that conversation, he documented what had been said simply because this is, he's been in the FBI forever, right? So that said, I think that he's also probably aware of how and when his testimony could be most useful in bringing light to the truth. And so my guess is that one of the reasons that he has stipulated that he wants to have this conversation happen in a public forum is simply because he feels like that is the best way in which he can present that information and be treated fairly.
How about the deputy FBI director? I'm sorry, the deputy attorney general, Rod Rosenstein, who wrote that letter about Comey should be fired because he messed up the Hillary Clinton investigation. And Rosenstein's letter didn't even mention Russia. Do I see that he's going to testify this week before the full Senate, not just a committee?
I actually had not seen that. But, I think that he obviously has – there have been all sorts of rumors about the way that he reacted to how Donald Trump used that letter. When the letter itself actually didn't call for Comey to be fired, simply said, that the investigation had been handled poorly. I think, obviously, whatever he has to say – he's in a more unusual circumstance than Comey simply because he still works for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And so I think that'll be interesting.
That letter, that memo implied that Comey should be fired, and then Trump hung it on that until he didn't. And what about Rosenstein? Have you been able to look into him? He's really the mystery man to me in all of this. Here he was, longtime U.S. attorney for the state of Maryland.
Right.
Appointed originally by George W. Bush, but retained by Obama for the whole 8 years. He seemed to have a high level of confidence in him on the part of Democrats. And then he goes and does this very weird and seemingly Trump loyalist, politicizing the Justice Department thing. Do you get the Rod Rosenstein story yet?
I honestly have not looked into it much. It certainly seems as though he was still fairly new at his job when he had this conversation, the job of Deputy AG when he had this conversation with President Trump. And, it's also not entirely clear what Donald Trump asked him for and how he told him it was going to be used, which I think is important to remember because, again, Rosenstein's memo, well, you're absolutely right. It certainly implied that Comey had handled the investigation of Clinton's email server poorly, never called for him to be fired explicitly, but also I don't know necessarily that that was an uncommon sentiment within the FBI. I think there was a lot of, we certainly heard a lot of reporting that suggested that FBI agents were not happy with how Comey had handled the Clinton affair, and so I guess that in itself isn't necessarily surprising.
The job of FBI director is a lot more than the Russia investigation, but it does include the Russia investigation, which the acting director, Andrew McCabe, testified last week is significant. So Trump and Sessions are literally interviewing candidates for the job of who gets to investigate them. That means the credibility of the FBI investigation rides on who they hire. Are you ranking candidates at the Washington Post yet on the basis of credible or not credible?
We are not. It's an interesting metric to do. I think that at this point in time, I don't know necessarily that there's any reason for people to feel as though the FBI is any less credible than it was, say, 2 months ago in terms of its investigations. But your point about the FBI director is very well taken. And, you need to look back only to the 20th century and J. Edgar Hoover to understand what an FBI, the power an FBI director can have for good or bad if he chooses to leverage it.
One other piece of fallout from last week's craziness. When Trump created the conditions for Mike Pence and Sean Spicer and others to wrongly state publicly that Trump's reason for firing Comey had nothing to do with Russia. It was all about the Rosenstein memo. And then Trump went on NBC and said, no, it did have to do with Russia. And he decided before the Rosenstein memo, Spicer and his deputy, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, got verbally beaten up by the White House press corps for giving false information. Pence was reported to be humiliated and, verklempt. And then Trump mused on Fox over the weekend about ending the daily press briefings and just giving news conferences himself every couple of weeks. I'm curious if that's created a buzz at the Washington Post, or from your vantage point as a Washington Post political reporter, what would be the public information implications of that?
Why these briefings exist, right? And that is because the president is the subject of an intense amount of media scrutiny. And so there are, on any given day, any number of questions that are raised about what a president is doing. So the idea of the daily press briefing is not simply to have a conduit between the president and the media. It is instead to have one big place where you can answer those prominent questions of the day. And so the White House only has to answer them once, right? So, it serves to help the White House in theoretical normal times as opposed to the media necessarily, although, of course, it also does give a public venue for the media to ask those questions. That said, if the press briefing is a place where you have a lot of hostility between the press secretary and members of the press corps and or they present incorrect or misleading or false information, the utility of that diminishes greatly. And there's so much hostility coming from the White House toward the media at this point in time. We saw last week how first we were told as members of the media that one story was the case with this Comey firing, and then later that that wasn't the case and there was no way for the press secretary to have known what the real case was because they hadn't had a chance to talk to the president, which of course is the whole point of answering questions in a press briefing. That the value of that, I think, has certainly diminished under Trump, but it certainly is not the case that if Trump came and did biweekly press briefings that we would learn more about Trump, because he is, he is certainly the most accurate source on what he himself is thinking in any given moment, but that doesn't necessarily mean the things he says are accurate.
Last thing, your colleague Philip Rucker had that line in his article today about a source close to the White House musing whether Trump is, quote, in the grip of some kind of delusion. Now, people are always musing that about Trump. Do a Google search on, Trump delusional, and you'll see articles going all the way back to the middle of the campaign last year where people are saying with some degree of seriousness that they don't know if Trump is delusional and he may be unhinged and he may not be psychologically prepared to continue with the campaign or take the presidency. People are always musing that about Trump. Is this ramping up in a different way now towards some sort of 25th Amendment crisis, possibly removing Trump from mental unfitness, which the 25th Amendment allows Congress and the cabinet to do? Or is this just more chatter about managing the boy president?
It's a good question. mean, I had seen no signs that we're approaching a 25th Amendment moment, simply because the actors who would have to pull that lever are ones that are generally loyal to Trump, and I just don't, that seems pretty unlikely, barring some obvious and egregious evidence that Donald Trump has, you know, an impaired mental state. I think in part it is, you know, at some point, the level, the constant surprise we get from how the White House acts, which, you know, there's a great story today, for example, where Politico reported that the Deputy National Security Advisor had given a fake internet meme to the president about global warming, which he accepted as true, and he was about to, you know, go off on it and potentially tweet something about this, you know, fake Time cover about global warming until his staff discovered that it was fake, and it was just this internet rumor, and then he backed down. But the question is, there is this whole system of people around him who provide him information that isn't necessarily accurate that he's acting on. And we keep getting surprised by the extent to which the White House does things that we've never seen before. And so I think to some extent this is a rhetorical ramping up as well, simply to reinforce the fact that this is such an unusual moment.
Hey, can you give me some intelligence about Republican Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, who's going to be a guest on our show later in the week? I see him referred to sometimes as an anti-Trump or even the anti-Trump. But where would you say Ben Sasse lies on a scale from Lindsey Graham, call it like you see it, to Paul Ryan, bring Trump another scoop of ice cream?
That's a heck of a scale. I would say that Ben Sasse is someone who has absolutely been a strong critic of Trump both before and after his election, generally on pretty particular issues. But he's also, as 538 has noted, because they've been tracking this, he's also very consistently voted with President Trump. And so I think that that actually is a space that a lot of Republican senators may be starting to find themselves in, as the New York Times reported over the weekend, is voting quietly with Donald Trump while criticizing him publicly, which they feel may give them space among those non-Republicans who are skeptical of Donald Trump.
Interesting. Ben Sasse will be here, by the way, folks, on Wednesday, if you're interested. Philip Bump writes for the Washington Post politics section, The Fix. Philip, thank you so much. Good luck with your baby. It's a beautiful baby.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Look at his beautiful Twitter picture of his beautiful baby on Philip Bump's Twitter feed. Thanks, Phil.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.